I invite you to join me in the Song of Songs, chapter number 5. We're going to begin at verse number 16 in a moment. First, let me give you the reminders. This is PG-13 material, and so you need to busy younger children with something else and save this for a little bit more mature study time. This, I believe, is intended to be a celebration of romantic and even sexual love between a husband and a wife. And so there's very intimate details that are given in different parts of this book. But what we've watched in this opera is the development of a relationship from a young couple, both of whom were in the service of King Solomon, to a married couple enjoying their honeymoon together, to now a couple that's been married for a while, still pursuing their jobs, and therefore sometimes being apart. And I believe that the current scene that we're in starts out with a bit of a nightmare, where the woman dreams that she's locked her husband outside, and he's trying to get back in. She won't open the door at first to him, but then when she keeps hearing him trying to get in, her heart softens, and she gets up and opens the door, but unfortunately, he's gone. And so she goes out into the night looking for him, and in this nightmare, she even imagines that she's beaten up by the watch, and taken her shawl is taken away from her. So she's wandering around with very little clothing on in the night, beaten up, and she still can't find her beloved. And so I believe at some point in this dream sequence, she wakes up, but she's asked to describe her beloved. And she gives this description from his head, top of his head to the bottom of his feet, how he's this strong, handsome, good-smelling man that she considers to be, and this is very important, her best friend. And that's an indicator that this relationship is maturing the direction it should. Now, God designed marriage to be between one man and one woman for a lifetime. And he's given sexuality into that as an enjoyable thing to be shared between the two of them. But the mechanisms of it also have a bonding process where the couple becomes joined to one another. That's the way it's kind of described in the book of Genesis, that they shall become one flesh, not just simply physically engaging in intercourse, but rather they are bonded into one couple. And that develops friendship, a best friendship over time. That's the goal, I believe. And so that's what we see in verse number 16. Even though she's kind of finishing up talking about the physicality of the relationship, she ends by thinking about the friendship that's involved. His mouth is full of sweetness. He's wholly desirable. This is my beloved. This is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. Now, the daughters of Jerusalem are kind of the chorus at this point, so they sing back. And I believe at this point, she's probably fully awake. Where has your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Where has your beloved turned that we may seek him with you? Verse 2, she sings back, my beloved has gone down to his garden, to the beds of balsam, to pasture his flock in the gardens and gather lilies. I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine, he who pastures his flock among the lilies. So I think when she's fully awake, she realizes that they may have had an argument. That's a possibility whenever he left to go to work. But this other stuff had not actually happened. She had not locked him out of the house. He had not disappeared into the night. She did not get beat up by the watchman. That was all part of this nightmare sequence. But what she really knows is he's off working. He's out taking care of the flock of Solomon, evidently. And so he's away right now. And but she starts verbalizing the truth that she knows, the thing that should settle down her heart. And this is really what helps in relationships that do run across hard times. Every relationship has the bumps and the little swerves right or left, where words are said and feelings get hurt and emotions run high and bad looks are given and things of that nature. But what needs to happen is for both to come back to the reality, I'm in this relationship for the long run. This woman, this man is a gift from God to me. And I love them with all my heart, soul, and body. And I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. We are a partnership. We belong to each other. And I want our friendship to be refreshed and restored, even after we've had words or even after we've had a little trouble between us. So I think that then opens up to the next part of the scene, which is the man comes home. He comes back from taking care of the sheep, and he is ready to pour out to her how he feels, genuinely feels about her. Whatever was wrong earlier is now all in the past. And he sings to her in verse 4, "You are as beautiful as Tirzah, my darling." Now, Tirzah was a royal city. It was about a day's journey north of Jerusalem. And so it must have just been spectacular in the way that it was built. And so he compares her to a beautiful city. And not just Tirzah, he also says, as lovely as Jerusalem. Now we know Jerusalem is a beautiful city in this time period because that's the way that Solomon made it. He built the temple to be magnificent and beautiful. He built his palace complex to be magnificent and beautiful. And he was redoing all of old Jerusalem to make it just as magnificent and beautiful. So this man is basically singing back to his wife, "You are as beautiful as the most beautiful cities I've ever seen. You are as awesome as an army with banners." Now remember, this is a time of peace. And so when the army gets together, it is getting together for pomp and circumstance, for show marches, for parades. And you know what happens with armies when they go on parade. They put on their best shiny armor and their most magnificent helmets, decorated. The soldiers would wear all of their awards that they might have gotten through the years of their service. And the horses are all decked out. The chariots are all decked out. And the banners are all flying in the wind, and they're beautiful with all of their colors. So he basically says, "You're as beautiful as a military parade to me." Verse number 5. "Turn your eyes away from me, for they have confused me." Now, he's talked about her eyes many times before and how beautiful they are. They're like a flitting dove or maybe a steel blue dove. But in this point, he says, "Don't look at me like that. You're doing me in with your eyes." And this may be kind of a little bit of a hint that he feels bad about whatever it was that happened between the two of them. Because it's a little difficult when maybe you've said things to your beloved that you shouldn't have said to look them in the eye the first time after that. Because you feel bad. And so I think that might be a little hint of what's going on here. "Turn your eyes away from me, for they've confused me." And then he falls back on his old sweet-talking words, things that he's said before. And I think couples do this, is they pick up phrases through the years that they repeat as a way of expressing their long-standing love that they have one for the other. "Your hair is like a flock of goats that have descended from Gilead." So her black strands hanging down on the sides of her face. Your teeth are like a flock of ewes which have come up from their washing, all of which bear twins, and not one among them have lost their young. So I love your smile, he's basically saying. Your temples are like a slice of pomegranate behind your veil. So your red rosy cheeks, I love looking at them too. And probably even they smell beautiful, because pomegranates have that marvelous smell. Then he says this, or sings this in verse 8. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines. Now that gives us a little historical context as to when this opera must have been written in the time of King Solomon. Because the totals given for Solomon is that he has 300 royal wives, that'd be the queens here, and 700 concubines. So this is early on in his kingdom, clearly, based on the numbers. Now, what's the difference between full queens and concubines? It's whatever rights and privileges were agreed to whenever the marriage contract was made. Remember that Solomon is going over the line here of what God had intended. God's original intention was one man, one woman together for a lifetime. But kings in particular, and powerful men also, would make multiple marriage contracts in order to expand their power and their influence. And so sometimes they would give rights of heritage, the rights to have children that would be counted as princes and princesses, in the contract of marriage. And so that would be full queens. Whereas concubines would not necessarily have that sort of heritage guarantee. But there would be other contractual promises made in the marriage. But let's not get too sidetracked with that. The point here is that they work in the kingdom of Solomon. And so they have interaction with the royal court. And so he says there are 60 queens right now and 80 concubines. And then there are maidens without number. That is, all the women that work in the guest services and in the food services of the palace. But my dove, my perfect one, is unique. She is her mother's only daughter. She is the pure child of the one who bore her. So he says, all of these women in the kingdom, all of these women we see on a regular basis, they may be special, they may be powerful, they may have their own families that make them the climax of their lives. But the fact of the matter is, you are the perfect one to me. You're the one of a kind. You are the only woman in the palace for me. You are the only daughter of your mother for me. You are the perfect woman. And that's the sort of sweet talking that husbands should genuinely be able to give to their wives. He then goes on to say, the maidens saw her and called her blessed. So the people that she had worked with, they considered her blessed. The queens and the concubines also, and they praised her, saying. So the opera now pictures the queens and the concubines of Solomon chiming in on how wonderful this woman is. Verse 10, who is this that grows like the dawn, as beautiful as the full moon, as pure as the sun, as awesome as an army with banners? So all the sorts of things that he praises her with, we've now got everybody else singing the praise of her. She's as beautiful as a brilliant dawn morning. She's as beautiful as the full moon up in the sky on a wonderful night. She's as wonderfully beautiful and pure as the sun blazing in the sky on a cloudless summer day. And she is as beautiful as a parade army. And the woman responds in kind to all this sweet talking, all of this love being poured out toward her by her beloved. Verse 11, I went down to the orchard of nut trees to see the blossoms of the valley, to see whether the vine had budded or the pomegranates had bloomed. Before I was aware, my soul set me over the chariots of my noble people. So she describes here going somewhere where she can just look at the beauty and experience the smells of the moment. And they've done this before. Remember, they spent time together out underneath the trees during the time of the siesta in the middle of the day. When the winter was over, he came calling and said, come with me, let's go and enjoy the blossoms of the springtime. And so here she is, kind of going down that same path. Verse number 12 is a weird sort of idiom. We're not exactly sure how it plays out for this, but it seems to be the idea of she's overwhelmed by the moment. It would be as if you suddenly found yourself in charge of the entire chariot forces when you weren't ready for it. That would be very overwhelming. And so she's overwhelmed with this moment of him coming back from work. And even though she'd had that nightmare and maybe they'd had the tiff before, that he loves her and counts her as his friend, that she is the most beautiful of all women, that there's no one that can hold a candle to her. And so she is very happy with that sort of response. The chorus sings, come back, O Shulamite, come back that we may gaze at you. Now, this is where we find out where she seems to be from. In Israel today, there is a little village. It's in the Palestinian territory, the West Bank area. No, excuse me, it's not. It's north of the West Bank area. But I think it might be, it's a Palestinian village. Can't remember for sure. But it's called Shulam. But it used to be called Shunem back in Bible times. And it's located just about 3 or 4 miles north of ancient Jezreel city. And it's near the site of a couple of major battles in the Old Testament. It's where Gideon and his 300 guys had their victory. Is right near the village of Shunem. It's where the Philistines were camped out before the Battle of Mount Gilboa when Saul was killed. So Shunem was in the plain of Jezreel. And so she seems to be from that city. The chorus is basically saying, you need to come back, come back. Don't go away. We want to look on you and on your beauty. And the man says, why should you gaze on the Shulamite as at the dance of the two companions? Now that might be, you think it sounds like he's saying, don't do that. Don't stare at her. But in fact, I think he might be saying, do you want to know why you should gaze at her? Because she is magnificent. And then he turns his attention to her again. And he does, once again, with her, what he did on the day of their wedding. On the day that they were getting ready to go to their honeymoon, he talks about her body. And he starts this time at her feet and works his way up. How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter. Now, again, this is one of the places where some of the commentators say, well, she must have been a princess. And my response is, no, she worked in the palace. She kept the kids, the goats for the food services. So, no, she was not a princess. So, why would she be referred to a princess? Pet names is the answer. It's common practice between couples to have pet names for one another. And those pet names will not always be tied to, quote, reality, end quote. For example, I've been married to Deborah for 40 plus years. And so When I talk to her about her getting ready to go out and look at her flowers in our property, I sometimes say, so are you going to go out and look over your queendom? Now, she's not a queen in a literal sense, but she's my queen. And our property is her queendom. And so it's a pet name that I use. So I think that's what we're seeing here, is he calls her his princess. So how beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter. The curves of your hips are like jewels, the work of the hands of an artist. So he says, your curves are just perfect. It's like they were designed by a master artificer. Your navel is like a round goblet which never lacks mixed wine. So again, this is intimate talk here. So he's basically saying, I love your belly button, and it's like a little goblet of wine that I'd like to get my lips on. So he's talking about kissing her belly here. And speaking of belly, your belly is like a heap of wheat fenced up about with lilies. And then, working his way up her body, the next thing that he comes to, your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. So he is intimately acquainted with every inch of her body, and he loves it all. And he wants her to understand that and know that. Your neck is like a tower of ivory, and your eyes like the pools of Heshbon by the gate of Bathrabim. Now that's a place on the east side of the Jordan River. It's in the annexed territories of Israel. And maybe the two of them have been there and seen these beautiful pools. And so that's how he describes her eyes. Then he says something that a lot of people, they would be insulted if they got talked about their big noses. Strong nose in the Middle East is a beauty point. And so he says, your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon, which faces toward Damascus. And then your head crowns you like Carmel. Carmel was a prominent ridge, wooded and terraced, a beautiful place that kind of highlighted the southern and southwestern edge of the Valley of Jezreel. And so they would have been familiar with this. If she is a Shunammite, if she's from Shunem, then she would have been very familiar with Carmel because she saw it the whole time she was growing up off in the distance. So your head crowns you like Carmel. The flowing locks of your head are like purple threads. The king is captivated by your tresses. So she may have woven in little purple threads into her hair whenever she served at the dinner table of the king, and the king was fascinated by that. How beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms. Your stature is like a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters. So he's still talking about her body here, and he says something here that, again, is exceptionally sexually intimate. He describes her as being a palm tree, and her breasts are like the little date clusters hanging down from the palm tree. And then he says this in verse 8. I said, I'm going to climb the palm tree, and I'm going to take hold of its breast stalks. Oh, may your breasts be like clusters of the vine, and the fragrance of your breath like apples, and your mouth like the best wine. It goes down smoothly for my beloved, flowing gently through the lips of those who fall asleep. So he talks about caressing her breasts. That's very intimate. He talks again about kissing her, and the smell of her mouth and the taste of her mouth, and how he just enjoys this intimate contact with her. And her singing back is, I am my beloved's, and my desire, his desire is for me. So she says, yes, I love it when you love me. I love it when you want me. Kind of almost sounds like some of the songs we have nowadays. The man then sings, come, my beloved. Let us go out into the country. Let us spend the night in the villages. Let us rise up early and go to the vineyards. Now, Remember that all of this scene started, I believe, with a nightmare that was prompted by some sort of spat that happened before they ended up being separated, with him maybe going on a shepherding trip away. And so the thing that needs to happen is to repair the damage that might have been done by that estrangement. And so what he recommends here is, let's go take a little trip. Let's spend some time alone. Let's have a second honeymoon, or let's have a little romantic getaway, which is always a good idea, folks, if you're trying to revive that love and that relationship that may have taken a ding from a little bit of a problem. And so he's basically saying, let's get away from it all. Let's get away from the city of Jerusalem. Let's go out into the country. Verse 12 continues, let us see whether the vine has budded and its blossoms have opened and whether the pomegranates have bloomed. So they've done this before. They've gone out and just enjoyed nature, the sights and the smells and the textures. This is their special way of reviving relationship. And it, I think it is very good for couples to get away from everything. Go and sit on the beach and just listen to the waves together. Go take a drive in the country with the windows open and the wind blowing the smells of the country in through the couple. Just whatever it takes to get away from it all. He says, there I will give you my love. So this is a romantic trip as well. The mandrakes will have given forth their fragrance. That was considered an aphrodisiac, not just the tasting of it, but rather the scent of the flowers of the mandrakes. And over our doors are all choice fruits, both new and old, which I've saved up for you, my beloved. So he's basically singing, let's go on a romantic getaway. Let's just go and enjoy one another's company, our friendship, and our sexual intimacy. Let's recapture our romance.